when it comes to hip hop, we have 50 years of amazing music to listen to. And I feel like when it comes to my listening with the genre, I've never reached a point where I feel like, oh, you know what? I've heard it all, because that's the beauty of the genre. There's so much music to go through, from the mainstream to the underground, from the 1980s to the 2020s, that you can never leave yourself in a place where you feel like you have nowhere else to go. And what's amazing is being able to find songs that truly leave a mark on you and leave you wanting to revisit them for years and years as they go on. And that's sort of going to be the basis of our episode that we're trying to bring to you guys today. And that's going to be showing you guys 20 different songs that we feel like every music listener should listen to at least once in their lifetime, because that's how much value they actually bring to a listener. And if you guys actually have friends, family members that aren't all the way invested into hip hop, maybe send them this episode and actually give them a taste of some of the best music that's at their disposal within this genre. And as always, guys, if you're new here and it's your first time listening, make sure to hit that follow button on Spotify, Apple Music, Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts, because we're actually putting out new episodes every single Tuesday. But let's get into this episode, and let me know, what was sort of the basis for going and choosing these songs?
I think standouts throughout the genre, especially for me. I have certain songs in here that I value to such a high regard, and that I wanted to kind of just show and showcase to the masses. And maybe people know these songs, but I think that when you're doing an episode topic as heavy as this one, you want to kind of give people not only an introduction, but something that they're going to be able to marvel at, right? Because Imagine telling people, well, oh, you should try this dish at least once in their lifetime, you know? And then after that, they try the dish and they're left a bit disappointed. I could promise you, every single one of the songs that I brought in has so much value. You guys are going to probably need Genius. And I feel like it's definitely some of the strongest material that's ever been brought to the plate.
A lot of lyrical onslaughts then, if you need Genius for most of these?
Well, it's not that. I feel like I wanted to bring a certain accessibility point, let's say. Because another thing with this episode too is, if you maybe recommend something to someone like a mortal man, it's a bit hard to follow, right? And it's a bit hard to, let's say, get into it. And it's a bit hard to maybe prompt you to go into another track, if that makes sense to you. Okay. So I tried to find a good mixture of accessibility, but also something that you're going to be able to marvel at. But how did you compile your list for today?
I think that I tried to choose songs that spanned various decades, just to give people a taste of different styles of hip-hop, different eras of hip-hop, because obviously production styles have always evolved and changed and been transformed as the years have gone on. So I try to bring a diverse pool in terms of decades. And I also feel like each and every single one of these tracks bring a lot of value uniquely to the genre that maybe not any other songs really compare. So that's sort of the basis that I went in on. But do you want to get started with your first recommendation?
Right. Where do you want me to start, man? I have a lot of stuff here. Okay, I'll give you the options. I gave a lot of 90s and a lot of 2010s. That's where like my list is compiled of.
All right, give me a 2010s that might surprise me that it's on your list. How about that?
Oh, 2010s that might surprise you. Okay, let's go on to the first one. This is going to be Free the Robots by Capital Steez, off of his debut mixtape.
No surprise, though.
And but I feel like everyone should listen to this song at least once.
Oh, for sure.
Because especially if you're familiar with the pro-era movement, you know, I think you should obviously be familiar with Capital Steez, but it was obviously Joey that went the lengths and, you know, had the career, and unfortunately Capital Steez passed away, and he didn't necessarily have the time to be able to develop his catalog. But what he left us with is not only gold, but it's some of the best writing that the genre has ever seen, especially for this decade. So going through Free the Robots, I feel like it's a very heavy song, you know, topically, just because if you understand maybe where Capital Steez was at with his life, and he was really deep into conspiracy theories and about, you know, political corruption and just about a bunch of different topics, right? This is kind of the song that encompasses all of that. And basically, when you get through Free the Robots, you find Capital Steez criticizing the government, criticizing technology and the morals of today's people. You know, you also see Capital Steez talking about how television is rotting the youth, and that, you know, there's media that's kind of driving propaganda to young people, that's forming the way that they think in order to have them to their favor. So there's a lot of these really heavy political topics that you just go through and you're kind of left wondering, well, what do I have here, you know? And what am I kind of looking at when I look at, let's say, the political landscape of the world, when I'm looking at, let's say, my soul, when I'm looking at, let's say, myself as a human being and what I believe in? It makes you question everything. And I feel like that's something very important in hip-hop, is that it's always well, not always, but for the most part, you could find certain subgenres and artists that really tackle this type of content matter that kind of make you think, and it flips everything on its backside. And that's what this song does for me. And it's super important too, because it is hip hop heritage. You know, Pro Era was one of the most influential rap groups of the 2010s. They revived New York boom bap. You know, you look at what Capital C's did for that whole movement. It was on a completely different level. And Capital C's is arguably the best rapper of that entire movement. So to be able to even introduce you guys to Capital C's music would be an honor to me. And if you guys want to go through his life story, it's very interesting. And as I mentioned, he tragically passed away. So rest in peace to Capital C's. But this is a must for any hip hop fan.
Yeah, I think listening to Capital C's as a whole is a must. And yeah, I've always had that opinion that he would have been one of the best rappers around right now if he had kept going.
Lyrically, there was not many people that were able to keep up with him. And the types of subject matter that he was putting in his song, it's just, you didn't see that. And it was like he really dug deep and he wasn't afraid to speak his mind. And that's the basis of Free the Robots, is to kind of open that third eye and to be kind of vigilant of everything that's going on around you and understand that you have the power and that you have the control. So Free the Robots, first recommendation for today.
All right, my first one is going to be Killed Before by Young Thug. Came out in 2017. It's a solo song from Thug that actually dropped on the album Super Slimy, which was a collab album between Young Thug and Future. And this sounds like something that you feel like you maybe should have heard on Beautiful Thugger Girls, just because Thug is singing over like a softer instrumental. But it's a song that I feel like you need to hear in your lifetime, because when it comes to hip hop, Thug is obviously a culture shifter, and his music has done so much to mold today's sound. And Killed Before is just a perfect representation of his artistic freedom, just because of the lengths that he's willing to go within this track. I mean,
do you feel like it's also a good thing to showcase to people, just because maybe you want to show how far hip hop could go, especially maybe with vocal performances, with flow switches? Like, Thug stylistically is completely different than any other rapper that we've ever heard before.
Absolutely.
Right?
Like I said, I mean, I always call Thug sort of a vocal acrobat for the trap scene. And on this song, he proves it. He pretty much is a nomad on this song, in the sense of he's just flying from one flow to the next, from one cadence to the next, from an aggressive flow to a singing performance without auto-tune on the hook, which is actually really nice. And I just love the experimental melodies and the way that he's able to really utilize his voice as an instrument all throughout the entire track. And then you have London on the track that brought a great beat, these fine-tuned electric guitars that are ringing in back. And I just remember first hearing this and being like, is this really Thug? Like, I wasn't sure if I liked it or I loved it, but the more that I listened to it, the more it grew on me, and the more that it felt like this is an outlier within Thug's performances, not only within this album, but within his career as a whole. And this is truly an example of, you cannot put any sort of label on any hip-hop artist, because as soon as you do, they'll switch up and do something completely different. I feel like that's something that's cool about hip-hop itself, is that when it comes to other genres, sure, artists are experimental, but hip-hop just gives you so much leeway, because as a whole, it borrows from so many genres and so many styles. So
it really does.
Yeah, shout out to Thug and Killed Before.
All right, let me go on to my next selection for today, and this is going to be by Outkast, called Mainstream, off of AT Aliens, one of my favorite ever Outkast songs featuring Kujo and Timo. And what's so sick about this song is that you obviously get two members from the Goody Mob right on this, and they have fantastic features on it. And it's just cool because there's a sort of paradox within the song, right? Because you get all, like, let's say everyone that's performing on the song talking about the struggles that not only you face when you reach the mainstream, but when you face the mainstream within the hood, and when you actually make it big with, let's say, within a life of crime. And it's talking about the two parallels that it comes with, right? Like, let's say you go mainstream in a life of crime, there's obviously a lot of shit that has to be dealt with, and you have to sacrifice a lot, and there's so much shit that comes with it. And then after that, once you start to get into, like, let's say, the mainstream of the music scene, whatever the case may be, yes, it comes with its struggles and it comes with a lot of stuff, but it's obviously a much better decision, like the rap song says, to be able to go mainstream within a clean area of your life and to be able to enhance it. So I've always loved the messaging of it. I feel like it promotes a wonderful message to a lot of people that might, you know, be struggling with this type of thing in their life, and they don't necessarily know where to go, and they're in sort of like a crossroads, right? Not only that, but the production by Organized Mob is absolutely incredible. Have you ever gone through Organized Mob's like their producer catalog?
Yeah, it's so stacked.
It's so fucking stacked. I mean, if you guys are obviously familiar with songs like, let's say, So Fresh and So Clean, they've produced that and much more for Outkast, and you get like this spacey and ethereal sort of production with boom bap drums, and that's something that I really like about the production, is that it's kind of an outlier from the rest of AT Aliens, if I'm being honest with you. But when you look at this song, there's so much value to go through, and if this could maybe be a low-key song that gets you into AT Aliens, I'll be very happy with that, just because I have had a pleasure, especially when I was younger, going through all of Outkast's albums, especially this one in particular. This is like my personal favorite
song off the album.
Well, also Outkast album, what I think is their best is Aquemini, but when you go through this album, there's a special feeling of it, and there's a sort of like raw feeling to it, and that's what I really like about the track, and I feel like everybody should at least hear it once in their lifetime. So
yeah, absolute classic. There's no debating that. Let me go with something a bit more modern for my next one. This is going to be Bam by Jay-Z featuring Damian Marley. And when it comes to Jay-Z's 444, we always hear talk about the story of OJ. We hear about the title track, of course. We hear about Family Feud, Marcy Me.
Actually, I think this song has the most streams on the album.
But Bam is incredibly underrated. At least I thought it was, at least in conversations that I've had with people. Let me go see this.
I think it actually has the most streams on the entire album.
That's crazy if that's the case.
Yeah, it went absolutely viral. I believe so.
No, absolutely incorrect. It has 27 million streams only.
That's still pretty sick, though. But regardless,
it's not a big song at all. Anyways, that being said, I feel like this is one of the biggest sonic departures from one of the biggest rappers of all time. And the fact that it came together better than you could have ever imagined was such a big W when you got this album. And what I love about it, too, is that Jay-Z, if you go through his catalog, he always knows how to grab your attention right from the actual beginning. For example, you look at a song like Public Service Announcement, and you have My Name is Hove, H to the O-V, I Used to Move Snowflakes by the O-Z. Like, he always would give you those opening lines and those moments that grabbed you right off the bat, and this song is no different. He starts off by bringing in Damian Marley, who gives greetings, and then you get the classic line, fuck all this pretty shit, Sean Carter shit. Fuck all this pretty Sean Carter shit, excuse me. And he's in Hove mode, bro. He gives us a reminder that even within his old age, he can rap really rapidly. I feel like this is his fastest rapping performance on the entire project. And it showed people that, you know, within hip hop, you could be approaching your 50s, you could be no matter what age, and you could still deliver one of the best albums of your entire catalog. And I feel like up until Jay-Z's 444, you didn't really see that too often with other catalogs. For example, looking at, let's say, Outkast, who you just spoke about, they sort of had a very limited catalog. We didn't really see them make music as they approached older ages. But with Jay-Z, this was one of those songs where he really proved that he can still shine and still sound close to how he did when he was still hungry and coming up and rising in the game. And just being able to hear Jay-Z rap over the looped vocal reggae sample was just so refreshing, because this was an artist that you had albums and albums from, and again, he's able to find a way to attack a style and a sound that he never had before. And for that reason, it's beautiful. And honestly, like, very important message within the song too, about like the fact that sometimes if you want to win in life and you want to achieve things and accomplish things, you have to have a bit of an ego. You have to have a bit of a sense of delusion to have that self-belief and put yourself over the edge to accomplish what you're going for. So I appreciate so much. I think there's so much value within this song for everybody. And it was always so funny to me that Nas literally made a whole album with Damian Marley, and yet this song, to me at least, is better than any track off of Distant Relatives. But yeah, I thought I had to bring in Bam for all those reasons.
Fantastic. All right, let me continue going on with this. Let's go on to Vice City by J-Rock featuring Black Hippie. And this was produced by Cardo and Young Exclusive back in 2015 off of J-Rock's album 9059 or 90059, however you guys like to say it. But it's really cool, because the reason why I wanted to bring this in is that not only is it a mega banger, right? Because you get that dark production all the way throughout. I love the drum arrangement on the entire song. It's fucking aggressive. It puts you in a different type of zone, but it's one of the few songs that you have from Black Hippie, and it's one of the biggest what-ifs within hip-hop history to see if, like, that group maybe would have developed a catalog, or maybe they would have gone for a solo studio album experience from that group, let's say. So I don't know. It's always been a big what if for me. And like when we talk about the what ifs, obviously there's like the Kendrick Lamar and J. Cole stuff. You know, there's the Drake and Wayne stuff. You know, there's all kinds of different super groups that were supposed to be formed. But this one really hurt me because when you're getting tracks like this, it's a completely different vibe. And I could have even brought in like, you know, the You Don't Even Know remix. That was another one that I was considering bringing in. But I feel like this one has a lot more value. And basically what's really fire about this song is that, you know, you get Kendrick Lamar that starts off with it and that he's basically carrying the hook for the entire track, but they're all using the same flow, like that stop and go flow to be able to, you know, finish off their end rhymes. And what's really cool about it too is that topically what they're doing is that they're all talking about the biggest vices that kind of have a hold over their life, and that's why they call it Vice City. But they're kind of playing into it in more of like an aggressive and a sort of like cockier manner, but there's a deep underlying message within it, you know, like Kendrick talking about getting the fur coats and him talking about how women have such a big, let's say, stranglehold on his life and everything that he kind of indulges in. The only one that steers away from that flow is Schoolboy Q, and it's low-key one of the best verses on the entire song if I had to do a ranking of them. But yeah, when you actually go into it, it's cool because, as I mentioned, not only is it a what if, but it's a perfect display of West Coast hip-hop. It's one of the best West Coast hip-hop songs of that year, and I also think that it's one of the best, could you call it a posse cut?
It is, yeah.
You could say
four and more. So
in
my
opinion, it's one of the best like modern West Coast posse cuts that you could find within the 2010s decade. So I also feel like there's an accessibility factor to where like everyone can kind of get into this. It's very aggressive. It's dark. It's a banger. I would love to hear this at a party. You know, like that's the type of vibe that I'm on with it. So I wanted to bring it in. And again, an album that I feel like deserves a lot more conversation is a 90059 by J-Rock. So if you guys can maybe get into this album through this song, have fun with it. So
it's a W. I mean, interesting to choose it over You Don't Even Know It or That Par remix. Also incredible.
Because this is like, this cuts, is not like a remix. This is a song.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This is like their track itself, right?
True.
And it's, I think, one of the only, is it the only
one of the only songs that they've done all together.
Well, released officially.
Released officially. I'm trying to think. Say What's Up has J-Rock, Kendrick, Absol. I think it's Miss. Is it Missing Q? Is Say What's Up Missing Q? It might be Missing
Black
Q.
Black Hippie on Genius. Let me see what you have officially.
So Say What's Up has, it does have Q. Yeah, here you go. So you have Say What's Up as another Black Hippie song.
Yeah, you have Vice City. You have You Don't Even Know. You have the Dad Part remix. Yeah, there's not necessarily too much.
Say What's Up's not coming up?
Say What's Up is not coming up.
Well, anyways, that's another one. So maybe it's not an accurate list.
Well, it's Genius. Usually they list out all of the credits. But yeah, it's probably left off.
Yeah.
All right, keep going. All right. What do you got?
Next song for me, we're going to throw it back to the 90s with Hip to the Game by Lord Finesse. And when it comes to Lord Finesse, a lot of people are going to recognize this song in particular because this was the song that Mac Miller sampled on Kool-Aid and Frozen Pizza off of Kids. And that became a really big cult fan favorite for the 2010s. But a lot of people don't really talk about this song when they talk about 90s classics. I feel like some people are familiar with it when it actually comes down to hearing it within like a lot of freestyles. And I absolutely love it. And that's honestly how I discovered it, was not actually through Kool-Aid and Frozen Pizza. It was because I was hearing LA Leakers and a bunch of these radio stations choose this instrumental as the backdrop to freestyles. And I'm like, this is absolutely fucking sick. I love the 90s boom bap hip hop influence within it. So I had to sort of check it out. And of course, if you're a big hip hop fan, you know that Lord Finesse was running around in the 90s with Big L. He produced a good portion of Lifestyles of the Poor and Dangerous. He did a lot of work with DJ Premier, and they had their crew. So a lot of history behind Lord Finesse, definitely an underrated rapper and producer. But to me, this has always been an essential hip-hop song just because it truly captures the spirit of competition within hip-hop, because the whole song is Lord Finesse focusing on the fact that as long as he's in the rap game, he's going to manage to stay relevant. And no matter how rich or broke he is, or no matter, you know, what place he's at in his life, once he has a hold of that microphone, he's going to be locked in, and he's going to be better than any rapper that
all-time
challenges
classic.
Him.
Yeah, it's an all-time classic.
Absolute all-time classic. Nice call and response sort of style during the hook. Some dope verses where, again, he's just affirming his status in the game. And delivering in a really laid-back manner. Like, to me, this would fit into, like, a chill hip-hop type of playlist, even though his tone is so assertive throughout it. But, yeah, this to me is, like, sort of a life is good type of day is where you want to put this on. Like, it's Friday, the paycheck just came in, you got a fresh cut, you're cruising in the whip. Like, just throw this on when you're having a good day, and it'll get you into more breezy 90s hip-hop songs. So maybe if you've had a hard time getting into that decade as a whole, maybe this song could sort of be your window into laid-back, groovy hip-hop from the 90s.
So. Yeah. All right, that's a fantastic choice. Let me go on to my next one. So for this one, I was going through J. Cole's catalog, and I'm like, fuck, how could I make an episode like this and not talk about a J. Cole rec? And I've talked about certain J. Cole songs on the podcast before, like a Sideline Watching, for example, Sideline Story example. Sideline Watching is an Uzi song. And I've gone through his catalog extensively. I've spoken about For Your Eyes Only. There's a song that you and I have never spoken about on the podcast. I don't think we've ever done
okay.
it.
Okay. Let Him Guess Born Sinner song?
It's False Prophets. We've never talked about False Prophets by J. Cole, and we've never gone about it in depth.
We never even brought it into like a TikTok
series.
We've
never really done it. That's crazy. Yeah. We've never done, because it's kind of been released as like a loosey, right? Yeah. It was loosely released in 2016. And do you know that this song was supposed to make the fall off?
The fall off.
J. Cole in 2018 in his Angie Martinez interview said that this song, he was specifically saving it for the fall off. So who knows if he would have re-recorded it. Maybe he would have redone it years later, but this would have been on the fall off. But he decided to release it.
That means that before he released it as part of the rollout for Your Eyes Only, that he was already intending to make the fall off. That's what it has to mean.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Because that's news to me, because I feel like everybody that's a J. Cole fan believe that the inception of the fall off began with KOD in 2018.
No, it was all planned. He was talking about the fall off.
I don't remember that in the interview. That's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was going back to the Angie Martinez interview, I have the excerpt here. He talks about it being a part of the fall off, which would be his sixth studio album, right? So that's really cool, but the track didn't even appear on For Your Eyes Only, right? Because this dropped, I believe, 2016. So I'll get the exact date for you, but I know
that For Your Eyes Only came out December. So it was obviously earlier in the year.
And then this came out December 1st. So it was kind of like, I guess, a precursor to the For Your Eyes Only installment. But at the end of the day, it just never made the final track listing. And J. Cole had said that he just felt like it didn't fit the narrative of the album, right? Because the writing on that album
Which it doesn't.
Obviously. But then again, it's like, do you rather see that or a Folding Close?
But
as like a bonus track. Let's say you get a bonus track.
At least Folding Close fits better into the narrative.
I get
you know?
What you're saying. But regardless, though, it's all good.
It's a better song than Folding Close, obviously. Course.
So it's on DSPs. And if you guys are obviously familiar with this song, then you guys are going to be able to pick up on the instrumental right away. This is the instrumental that was used by many different rappers, most notably Joey Badass for Waves. It was produced by Freddie Joaquin. And it has this classic, wavy, boom bap sort of feel to it. And it's always interesting because this is a career-defining song for J. Cole, right? Because he's calling out false prophets, most notably Kanye West. And
that's the lore behind
it. No, he said it. He said it. He confirmed.
Did he confirm it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think he's ever confirmed it.
When was the last time you went through that Power 105 Angie Martinez interview?
Fuck, man.
There is full of gems in it.
I saw like sort of a stretch of it this year. I just don't remember talk about that.
This is an article excerpt. In May 2018... interview with Power 105's Angie Martinez, Cole confirmed that part of the verse did in fact apply to Kanye West.
Wow.
Yeah, it was for him.
Wait, no, you know what? That's why. I think I saw the Angie Martinez interview that he did after KOD, which was at...
But this is the one. May 2018 is after KOD.
What the fuck?
Go back to that interview.
How did I miss those moments? But I remember watching the entire podcast and being like, well, this never came up. What the fuck?
Regardless, it's one of his best ever songs in his catalog, and I think you could consider that. It's fuck. Hey, we didn't rank this song within our... within ranking every J. Cole song. It's officially released.
No, because we chose to leave out all like Lucy's. That was sort of the rule.
Where
would it place? Top 30, 40, around that range.
I say top 20.
Top 20?
Maybe.
It's a fantastic song, but I don't know about top 20.
He breaks Kanye to smithereens. And
yeah, he went in, man.
He breaks down
and
everyone.
He did it in a respectful way. Like, he was composed. Like, he was calling it out how he saw it from his perspective. Yeah,
absolutely.
Like,
so not only is it a cool diss track, but you could just fucking whip this on and vibe out, bro. Especially with this instrumental. And personally, I'm a bigger fan of Waves just because I feel like I've connected to that song a lot more. But this is a cool moment for J. Cole because, like, there's so many different moving parts around it. You know, you have this being attached to the fall off. You have this kind of being released in the same time as For Your Eyes Only. He only revealed the intentions of the song when KOD was released. It was supposed to be on a couple of different albums. It didn't necessarily make it, but it's released on DSPs. It's one of those weird, strong tracks, if you get what I'm trying to say, for J. Cole's catalog.
It's really like a hallmark in his catalog, because when you think about it, to me, it's always been like the antithesis to Let Nas Down, because it's taking that concept and flipping it on its head, where it's like, now it's not me letting down my role model, it's my role model letting me down.
Yeah.
So pretty cool how that's an addition to the catalog.
Oh, it's a must listen for every hip hop fan at this point. If you've never gone through it, there's even a music video for it out, which is really cool as well. So just an incredible song. And you're also finding J. Cole in like peak powers here. If it's recorded around that 2014-2016 era, like, that J. Cole is really untouchable. So we'll see if he gets back to that form for this next album. And
absolutely,
I think he will, because you're already starting to smell something in the air, you know?
For sure.
Shout out to J. Cole.
All right, I'm going to totally deviate from my last pick, which was Lord Finesse, and go into some Lil Reese. No. So I brought in Traffic by Lil Reese featuring Chief Keef. Came out in 2012, and I could have brought in Love Sosa. I could have brought in I Don't Like, but I feel like, you know, most people listening to this have probably heard those drill songs, and there's other Chicago drill classics that really helped the argument for drill music being one of the top-tier modern subgenres within hip-hop, and Traffic is a great example of that. Of course, you have Young Chop, who produced this production, and it starts off with a nice kick where you have a nice buildup of these synthetic horns, and then the drums kick in, and we hear Reese spitting, "We ain't really with that talking, bitch, we love that action." And it's a song about who's cut out for this shit and who's not. It's merciless, it's savage, and it's exactly what you want a drill song to be. And I have a lot of, like, personal sort of history with this song. I remember being, like, 14, 15 years old, and my neighbor would pick me up in the morning to drive to high school, and we would be playing a bunch of drill music, just like fucking Traffic, just bumping it in his SUV, windows down. And it was pretty funny because we would literally start our mornings at like fucking 7 a.m. with Chief Keef blasting in the whip.
That's
And I just have great memories going to school, listening to this music, and really making those moments and those drives make me fall in love with drill music. Because a song like Traffic, if you really want to enjoy it, you got to blast it on the speakers and you got to be in a fucking zone. I love that they're showing you how tough the streets of Chicago could be within it. Their delivery is thrilling all throughout it. And they really have the perfect mic presence for this type of song. So, not really too much to analyze or dissect with the track itself. But again, this is a great example of how fantastic drill music could be at its best. And to me, that was really during that 2012 era.
That's an all-time classic, for sure.
It is.
For, like, 2010s hip-hop?
Absolutely,
I remember that was being played everywhere.
Yeah, and I don't really love
And we're from Montreal, too. So, like, it's kind of crazy that Chicago drill scene got all
had
the way
hit here, yeah.
The way that it did, though. Like, everyone was bumping, you know, Reese and Sosa and everyone else, you know? It's kind of fucking crazy when you think about it now in 2024. There's no rappers doing that.
There isn't.
And think about it. Like, really, like, that sort of movement?
Like, birthing a movement like that?
Yeah,
you don't see it.
You can't see that anymore. So, that's a great pick. I think everyone should listen to that at least once. So, all right, let me continue on with this. Let's go on to another one. And this is where I'm going to start going into the 90s a bit. And this is going to be Mass Appeal by Gangstar, produced by DJ Premier, of course, released back in 1994. And what's cool about this song is that if you guys are a fan of Gangstar and you've gone through, let's say, Moment of Truth and, you know, other albums from them, you could find so many different songs that you could bring into this type of conversation, right? Like Above the Clouds, for example, that's another big one.
All-time classic.
But I wanted to bring in Mass Appeal because I've never actually spoken about this song and we've never had a conversation about it at length on the podcast. But I do feel like it is an important song to the hip-hop genre just because not only is it one of the most commercially successful songs in you know, a Gangstar's catalog, but it's kind of ironic because it's going against the grain. It's talking about people who are selling their souls in order for mass appeal, and that's the entirety of the song. And when DJ Premier was talking about mass appeal, he says, we were really making fun of the radio, and it became our biggest radio record. And to this day, it's one of my favorites ever. So the fact that it's still like one of the best songs that he's ever laid hands on and he's ever produced still means a lot to me, and it's just absolutely iconic seeing Guru rip through his verses, seeing the iconic sample from Vic Juris's Horizon Drive from 1980. Not only that, but there's a Big Daddy Kane Raw sample within there as well. So there's just full of like cultural moments within the track itself, and it's just cool because, you know, back in the 90s, hip hop was arguably at its purest. And people were starting to advocate for keeping it at its purest, especially when it started getting really commercialized within the 90s. So it's a very important song for 1994. And just going back to it, it's aged in such a sick manner, man. Like, putting this on in the whip, it's such a menacing song, dude. Like, you feel like you're on top of the world when you're listening to this and that you could overtake anything you want. And it's a song that preaches integrity and that preaches artistic integrity. So even maybe if you're struggling with that fork in the road where, well, you know, should I monetize, or where do I find the good middle point of monetizing with my art or with my job, a project I have, whatever the case may be, this is always a good song to go back to remind you what's the right path to go through. So I've always loved it. I think it's a must listen for everyone. And again, if this is a song that could get you into Gangstar's catalog, man, I have done you guys a pleasure. So
hopefully enjoy. So, absolutely. I feel like Gangstar as a whole just doesn't get them as many plays, especially like from our generation. But you know what? That's a good thing, because it honestly, it always makes us happy to be able to put people onto Gangstar for the first time. But yeah, speaking about classics, I'm going to bring in Thug's Mansion by Tupac. The original acoustic version came out in 2002. This is one of, if not my favorite Tupac song of all time. And since it might not crack my top 10 rap songs of all time, I figured I got to take every fucking opportunity I can to talk about this song, because it is an absolute must-listen.
When would you get the opportunity again?
That's it. I don't know what's going to be, you know, in our cards for future content necessarily a year from now, let's say. So I had to bring it in somewhere, and I wanted to bring it in here. And this song was released in 2002 on the posthumous album Better Days. And what's interesting is that there was actually two versions of the song that were released on the posthumous album. So you had the solo Tupac version, which was the way that you could say it was intended to be released, because Tupac did record it solo. And then you have the version with Nas, and that version with Nas was also featured on Godson, which was Nas's album that came out the same very year. That being said, I love both versions. I urge you guys to actually check both of them out, but I do want to focus on the Tupac solo version. And what's amazing is that it's literally just an acoustic guitar that is the backdrop of this entire track. And I mean, not many people can keep your attention for 4 minutes off of a simple guitar riff, but Tupac's words were that powerful. They were able to captivate you all throughout. I think that it's arguably his most heartfelt, honest, and spiritual song. It's about him envisioning Thug's paradise, and a mansion where, you know, Thugs could live well. And to me, like, there's always these moments within hip hop where, unfortunately, we have artists that pass away. And oftentimes, it's sort of like a bit freaky in the sense where it's like you get these songs from a Mac Miller, from a Nipsey Hussle, from a Tupac, where it feels like they're rapping to you from the perspective of them being in the afterlife. And that's exactly what you're getting on a song like this, where, you know, Tupac literally speaks to his mother saying, you know, dear mama, don't cry, your baby boy's doing good, as he's detailing his experience in heaven, meeting friends like Marvin Gaye, watching a performance from Billie Holiday, and him being united with friends. And ultimately, it's just a beautiful song about Tupac going through his trials and tribulations, him talking about having contemplated suicide and how at the end of the day, he feels like he'll finally reach peace when he leaves the earth. So it's bittersweet in terms of how you might react to it, because there's a lot of sad emotion, but there's also a lot of uplifting sentiments that are brought into the track. I could ramble about this song for fucking hours, but you have to listen to it, because Tupac is an icon, and this is a song that really stands alone within his catalog and really shows you the type of eloquence he had as a poet. So, yeah, had to bring that in.
What a big W. All right, let me continue going on with this. This was actually a song that I posted on my story not too long ago. You actually like this story. And this is This DJ by Warren G.
Absolutely.
You know, produced by Warren G. And often when we talk about West Coast hip-hop, you talk about The Chronic, you talk about, let's say, what was going on in Death Row. You could talk about Gin and Juice. You could talk about so many different records. But I do feel like this is one of the best West Coast hip-hop songs of all time. And you know what's crazy? Did you ever go through the interview that they had with Drink Champs, with Warren G?
I did not. No.
So basically, Warren G, when he was on Drink Champs, he said this DJ's chorus was written by Snoop Dogg. And apparently, he was supposed to be on the hook instead of Warren G. But apparently, what had happened was is that they had major... problems with between the record labels that didn't allow Snoop Dogg to be able to release the chorus, and then Warren G ended up taking it, and well, it's arguably one of his biggest ever songs. And
I'm happy he delivered it, to be honest.
Yeah, Snoop Dogg would have sounded crazy on that hook, though. The song
is phenomenal as it is.
Of course,
so.
It's a perfect song. Yeah. It really is. But I'm just saying, is that like, do you think it maybe would have been a tad better with
would've
that
been a cherry on the cake for you,
bro? Listen to that hook. That's literally a Snoop Dogg flow. That is Snoop Dogg's, like...
I don't care.
That is fucking...
I've listened to it for years as Warren G, and I'm going to keep doing
yeah,
so.
Obviously,
I don't want to hear
it. And, of course, it was produced by Warren G, released back in 1994. And one of my favorite parts about the song is actually a sample. So it samples Curious by Midnight Star, which was an old song that released back in 1984. And if you listen to the drum pattern and some of the keys on that song itself, I believe that Warren G ended up speeding up the sample and it made for a bit more of an exciting sort of production. And when you get into the content matter of the song, Warren G is just talking about spending his days, you know, in, you know, Los Angeles and where he was at, you know, growing up, and talking about all the types of little side quests that he was doing. And it's one of those feel-good songs. You know, you could just throw it on, you could relax, you don't have to think too much. You know, you could get into the writing of Warren G, but it doesn't necessarily require you to think too much. Also talking about all the gang violence that he was a part of, you know, back then, but how he transitioned his life into becoming a G. And when you start to get into the chorus, it's super catchy, and I knew right away that it was a Snoop Dogg chorus once I like read the interview, because if you go through the actual flow itself, you'll find something similar on, let's say, a Doggy Style, for example. So I wanted to bring it in. It's a West Coast classic. It's a must listen for anyone that's invested into the genre, and you guys would absolutely love it.
Yeah, this is like an ultimate like cruising song. Like, this is just one of the best to play in
the
whip.
One of the best smoking songs as well.
That too, yeah, for sure. But yeah, all right. Next up on my list, I'm gonna have Tales by Schoolboy Q.
Oh, you brought in Tales.
2019 off of Crash Talk. One of my favorite Schoolboy Q songs of all time.
Is it because of the album announcement?
It's not, man. Maybe it is because I was revisiting a lot of Crash Talk because of the album announcement, and then it kind of was fresh in my memory, so maybe so. But that being said, obviously Q has classic songs like Collard Greens and Hands on the Wheels and that part, songs that everyone knows, but there's a lot of important songs in his catalog that people never speak about, that don't get streamed a lot, and Tales is one of those tracks. And when it comes to Crash Talk as a whole, like, it's obviously one of his most personally revealing albums, one of his most mature sounding albums, and Tales is very important because you're getting to hear from one of the most cold-blooded, in terms of presence, delivery, subject matter, one of the most cold-blooded gangster rappers of the modern era, sort of let you know what corner of the world he's coming from, and also how he formed the ethos of his artistry. So, coming from one of the most important and vibrant voices in hip-hop, that's what makes this a must-listen. You're really getting to see the softer side of someone who presents himself as very tough and very macho, you could say. And I love this song just because of all the little quirks that Q puts into it, which is something that he does all across so many of his tracks. Like, for example, the sort of fake and sarcastic laugh that he adds at the beginning of the track, which sort of automatically makes you wonder what state of mind he's entering the song in. Apart from that, the hook has a very hazy and psychedelic vibe to it as the vocalist is singing about dreaming and being in this other dimension. And we hear these trippy keys. So what I love the most about this song, though, of course, is the fact that Q is reflecting out loud, rapping about how he could have been a Division I football player if he wanted to, but he just wasn't with it. He could have excelled at school if he wanted to, but that's just not what was grabbing him in terms of a lifestyle choice. And what I love, too, is that he raps about what could have happened if he kept gangbanging, which means that he sort of goes into this scenario where it's like, well, if I kept doing it, I would have probably missed my mother's funeral because I would have been locked up. My daughter could have turned into a hoe. Like, he's going through literally all these scenarios where it's like, this is why I'm so thankful that I turned right instead of left. So it's really sort of like a life-changing moment for Q in terms of what he's presenting to the audience, and just so many cool Easter eggs within it as well. So
what a fantastic
big must listen for
me. Best song on the album?
Shit.
That or Attention?
That or Attention, but my favorite song to listen to off the album would be Crash.
Yeah?
Yeah, in terms of most replay
Dangerous
value.
Dangerous is fantastic as well. Yeah, I have to revisit that album. But okay, let me keep going on with this. Okay, this is going to be, I believe, my last song from the 90s. Yeah, this is my last song from the 90s, and this is going to be 93 Till Infinity by Souls of Mischief, produced by A+. And
classic.
This is a classic song. If you guys have ever listened to 93 Till Infinity by J. Cole, I believe he covered it on what was it, the warm-up?
I don't know if he covered in the warm-up, but he freestyled to it.
No, but it was a song on the warm-up. Hold on a second. 93 Till Infinity, J. Cole. This was on... Hold on a second. Let me find it on Genius. Because he did the LA Leakers freestyle back in 2021. No, people are not giving me the right one. I believe it was on the warm-up. And this is one of the earliest songs that ever released within his catalog. And yeah, it's from the warm-up.
Yeah.
So if you guys know it from that, kind of like your Kool-Aid and frozen pizza situation, this is what this is for me. And it's just so fucking sick because you listen to that Billy Coleman Heather sample, and it's just like such a chill, relaxed, laid-back sort of production. And it's such a feel-good type of song that it will absolutely bolster your mood no matter what type of situation that you're in. You feel like things are constantly moving and are constantly in fast pace when you're going through it. And apparently they were in high school when they released it, and apparently it was supposed to be called 91 Till Infinity. And then after that, it was supposed to be called 92 Till Infinity. And essentially, it released back in 1993.
So that's why, because they kept pushing it.
Yeah, and they kept pushing it. They call it 1993 Till Infinity. And apparently, there was another beat for it that was a lot slower and that wasn't as fast-paced. So I always wondered what that kind of sounded like, right? Because I was a big fan of like the kind of like Rush Hour sort of production for it. It feels like you're in a car in New York kind of driving through Manhattan, you know, or you're driving through Brooklyn and like... things are in constant motion and everyone's kind of living out their life in the same sort of environment. And that's what I like about it. There's a sort of like youthfulness to the track itself. And it's just such an accessible track for, especially for you guys to get into 90s catalogs, you know, kind of give you guys, kind of to give you guys a taste of like how good the 90s was for catalogs and just how many gems there are within it. And obviously people talk about, you know, Tribe Called Quest, Outkast, people talk about Dr. Dre, Tupac, Nas, Biggie, you know, the list goes on, but this is a song that deserves more and more conversation. And there was a huge reemergence of this song after Cole covered on an LA Leakers. And people were like, bro, what the fuck's his beat? And then they're like, oh, fuck, I heard this on the warm-up. And now you get it all these years after. So it's definitely a staple in hip-hop. It's a must-hear for anyone that's entering the genre. And you guys will absolutely enjoy it.
Have fun. Absolutely. Fantastic song. Speaking about other classics, I have two more songs that are not from the 2010s or newer. So starting off with Gazillion Ear by MF Doom, production J Dilla, 2009. MF Doom is one of the greatest to ever do it, but a lot of people don't seem to, you know, go beyond Mad Villainy when it comes to the catalog. And
well, I think Operation's Doomsday and
very underrated.
I don't know, bro. It has crazy vinyl sales. Like, a lot of people have been getting...
Well, yeah, because MF Doom has a big fan base. But, in general conversation, I feel like certain people just cap off at Mad Villainy. But just to say, Born Like This is a fantastic album. And I wanted to bring in Gazillion Ear just because it's a song where MF Doom is really firing on all fronts. It's a perfect example of that. I love how much detail is put into all the double, triple meaning, starting off with the song title. Like, Gazillion Ear is actually a homophone for gazillionaire, referring to MF Doom having a gazillion dollars, like he raps about in the song. And in typical fashion, you could expect MF Doom to rap with his usual free associative rhyme style. And it's just, there's funny punchlines all across it. 4 minutes without him really stopping it. And truly one of his best ever rapping performances. And the posthumous J Dilla beat is fire. You get to the second half and you have like these medieval organs that are ringing through. And it's just, it's the perfect
medieval
quirkiness. Medieval
yeah.
quirkiness and mysteriousness that you want to hear for an MF Doom production. And I love bars about him splitting Skrilla with Dilla and other schemes like off the top, J Strongbow, play along, bro, wear a mask like Yo off the Gong Show, flow slow as Mongo, Don Juan, Thong Pro, for your info when he's not practicing Jim Crow. Just some of the most impeccable rhyme schemes that you could experience in hip-hop, period. So, had to bring that one in. Gazillion Ear by MF Doom.
There we go.
What do you got next?
That's a huge W. All right, let me continue going on with this. Let's go on to my next selection. Fuck, where should I go? All right, let's do this next one. Let's do The Cow by Westside Gunn featuring Conway the Machine, produced by Derringer off of HW4, I believe. Is it off HW? Yeah, HWH4. Yeah, and this is The Cow, track number 4? No, it's the opening track, actually, to the album. Arguably one of the best hip-hop songs of all time, especially for the 2010s. And it's fucking crazy because it's a Westside Gunn song, but it's a Conway the Machine song. And you could find one of the best ever rap features of all time on this. And if you guys are not familiar with Conway the Machine's story, you know, he was tragically shot, and basically he talks about the Bell's palsy and that how it affected his life, and also talks about the death of his cousin Machine Gun Black. And it's one of the most in-depth, personal, and just shivering verses that you will ever listen to. Like, if you're having a bad day, or you need to be motivated, or you're feeling down, you're feeling grumpy, just go listen to Conway the Machine and how he talks about being shot and how it affected his life and how everything was on the line for
him. I don't know if it'll bolster your mood, but it'll give you an amazing story to listen to.
It puts you in a zone where a battery's in your pack, you know. If he could make it as a rap superstar with Bell's palsy and he's able to rap and it becomes kind of like his thing stylistically, and it actually enhances like his delivery, and it kind of becomes stylistically what he's known for, it's a blessing in disguise. And that's what he talks about on the song, and that's why the verse is so fucking cold, because he was talking about how he could have gone out and he could have found that guy and he could have fucking clipped him, but instead what he did was that God apparently gave him a gift to go ahead and rap. And to be able to get that gift, he had to be able to get past one of the most painful points in his life, which was losing his cousin and getting shot and getting Bell's palsy. It's a badass fucking song. It's like a John Wick story. Like, yeah. you don't fucking hear that, you know? It's like a 50 Cent type of story where, you see 50 getting shot 9 times and coming back, and kind of has the slur because his jaw's misplaced, and it kind of creates his whole identity and his whole flow and cadence. It's one of those fucking stories. It is so deep.
He was a sick rapper even before the incident. Like, he was great.
He's a wizard.
Yeah.
But it showed, like you said,
it shaped his identity as like how we know him to be today, just because it's become such a prominent topic for him.
It put the machine in Conway.
Yep.
It just proved to you how much of a fucking machine this guy is, and like the lengths he was going to be able to get out of the street and change his life around. Honestly, like the Westside Gunn verse is cool. Like, I'm all worried about the Westside
Gunn. Yeah, no one talks about the Westside Gunn when it comes to the
because
Cow.
Because who the fuck's expecting that, right? You open up Hitler Wears Hermes 4. And you start off the track, and it's just fucking Conway the Machine laying his whole life in front of you and explaining the whole story, you know, and talking about how God gave him a second chance to start rapping. That is fucked. That is such a fucked story, and it is so well put together, and it's one of my favorite verses I've ever listened to in hip-hop history.
Yep.
I am dead serious. Again, if this is the song that could get you maybe into Griselda and that could get you into that whole Buffalo scene, and that could get you creeping into the underground for the new sort of boom bap and the 90s renaissance that we saw maybe in the late 2010s, early 2020s with Griselda, I've done you guys a major service. So please enjoy this one for me.
Yeah, that's definitely a modern classic. But speaking about Griselda, I think that's a good leeway into Wu-Tang. And I have Impossible by the Wu-Tang Clan released in 1997. And essentially, this is one of the best Wu-Tang songs of all time, and it's for a good reason. They're all taking turns on the mic to convince the listener how destructive gun violence can be, which is an amazing topic, especially in hip-hop, especially coming from Wu-Tang, which is a group that never really shied away from, you know, bringing in you know, street life dynamics and you know, gun violence topics and whatever it is. But for them to take this approach is really mind-blowing, and I'm sure it was mind-blowing when it came out in 97. But instrumentally, very eerie and unsettling sound. It's meant to make you feel on edge, and it does have creepy guitar strings and these stark piano notes. And RZA opens up the song rapping faster than he ever has before. And honestly, I don't think RZA always has the strongest verses ever when he appears on a Wu-Tang track, but this is definitely a standout performance from RZA. And what's interesting is that RZA himself said that Ghostface's verse on this song is the best verse ever dropped by any Wu-Tang member ever. And while I definitely agree that it's up there, I don't know if it's number one, but it's definitely in contention because the Ghost verse is so special. Like, immediately off of the first lyric that he's spitting, he puts you in the scene of the street story with the dialogue style that he chooses to go with, where you're on this crime scene where his close friend has just gotten shot, and he's literally taking you through every vivid detail that you could imagine, and you feel like you're right there and that you've witnessed all of it by the end of the verse. And I won't really reveal anything of the plot and what happens, but it really will resonate with you for how brutally vivid it shows you what could happen when things go wrong, when people are playing around with guns and with weapons. But yeah, I also love Raekwon's sort of spoken outro. He's not really rapping on it, but he's just reinforcing the message of the song.
Closes the track well.
Exactly. And yeah, I love that it adds urgency to the matter, a very important matter. And I wish that other artists were as direct as they were with the intention of a song, because it was beautifully put together. So maybe a tough listen, but a listen that will really have your ears glued to your headphones the whole time through.
Awesome. Yeah. Great recommendation.
So two songs left for me. What do you got?
I got two songs left.
Awesome.
All right. So my next one is going to be Wave Files by Lupe Fiasco, off of Drogas Wave, produced by Soundtrack, released back in 2018. This is the sixth song off of Drogas Wave and actually plays a central role in the album and the narrative of the album, which is called Long Chains. And if you guys want to get into the album narrative of Drogas Wave, Lupe Fiasco went on Reddit and kind of explained it for his fan base, and it's all there for you guys. It's a
crazy concept.
It's a crazy fucking concept. And even when you get into Drogas Wave, you're going to find different types of songs with different messaging, but I feel like this is definitely the standout for Lupe. And I do feel like when you talk about Lupe Fiasco, often the murals are talked about, but this is the one. This is really the one right next to Mural that feels like, okay, this is a magnum opus for him. And basically, I want to read you the synopsis of the song itself, because it's kind of a tricky sort of narrative within it. So I'm going to try the best I can with it. And this is directly from Genius. So in this sixth song off of Drogas Wave, Lupe speaks from the perspective of kidnapped Africans that jumped overboard slave ships during the Middle Passage. Lupe spins the narrative to as if the souls of the slaves are still alive, traveling back to their homeland in Africa. The song is a central part of the narrative of the Long Chains. Lupe gave a brief summary of it back on Reddit. And then after that, the Wave Files concepts are basically, you know, it's an audio format for music, but it also connects with how Lupe connects the present and the past throughout this song and the Long Chains narrative. He uses the story to comment on his relationship with his former label Atlantic. And then after that, that's when the Jay-Z bar comes in at the beginning of the song itself. Not only that, but obviously there's the jumping ships concept, and there's kind of a hidden meaning within that, and Wave Files could also be seen as waves within the ocean itself. So it's a crazy fucking song, because not only do you need to hear the entire album to really get into it, and if I could get you into Lupe's catalog, I absolutely will do so, and that's why I wanted to bring it in, but there's so many different spider webs that connect within this song itself, and sometimes, like, I still have trouble, like, listening along with it.
Yeah.
It's such a mindfuck. It's a kind of playing Sudoku with hip-hop. And the reason why I think it's a must-listen for every hip-hop fan is because these types of songs will train your ear as a listener, right? Hip-hop is all about getting immersed into the education, getting immersed into the competition of listening. You know, like, what are you able to understand as a hip-hop listener? And the more and more that you train, and more that you try to dive in with Genius and sort of interconnected within the Easter eggs of the album, the more fun and appreciation comes with the genre. This is one of these songs where it's like you want to sit down and you really want to listen to it, and you want to get immersed into the writing of it, and you want to follow along verse by verse, because Lupe continuously reveals more and more meat of the song song itself. So that's why I wanted to bring it in for anyone that's a first-time listener, is that, you know, maybe you're not, because musically it's still fucking fantastic. You know, Lupe has his slick flows within it. It's fantastic rapping. The hook is great on the song itself, and the production by Soundtrack, it's so nice. It's just like, it's a perfect boom bap beat. And that's what I love about it as well, is that it also aesthetically pleases the ear. But if you want to like really test yourself and you want to kind of get into the Easter eggs and you want to start like really testing yourself as a listener, use this song. It could really bring a different dynamic.
Dragas Wave is it's one of the most challenging listens you could ever find in hip hop, like period, or maybe even in music. It's really, really complex. It's really layered. Fucked. It takes time and repeated listens to get into, because, but it's a fun challenge.
It really is a fun challenge, because like you can't go a single second without paying attention to every single word that's said, not only within WAV files, but within the entire album. And I have trouble going through Jaga's WAV even as a hip hop podcaster and someone that's been covering music now for the better part of like half a decade. So enjoy that for me, and you guys are going to be mind blown. It's really fantastic, and just open up Genius. I believe there's even a Wikipedia page for it as well, so you guys could even go along deeper. I'm sure there's Reddit posts on it as well, so enjoy that for me.
Absolutely. All right. Next up for me is going to be Life is Like a Dice Game by Nas featuring Cordae and Freddie Gibbs, a song that came out in 2021. And what's interesting
is
that...
It's a pleasant surprise.
It was a very pleasant surprise. And what's interesting is that the song was originally made like after Illmatic. And what ended up happening was that Nas started off, he wrote some of the first verse, some of the hook, but he never finished the song. So Spotify apparently approached him, asked him to resurrect the song and finish it. So calls in Hit-Boy, Hit-Boy reworks the beat and ends up getting Freddie Gibbs and Cordae on the track. And I love the idea of bridging multiple generations together, because you have Nas who's in his 50s, you have Freddie Gibbs who's in his 40s, and Cordae who's in his 20s. So to see three different generations, three top-tier spitters and lyricists combine forces, it was a hell of a moment.
By the way, when was this song supposed to be released initially? Was it created within the 90s or early
2000s? 90s. Right after Illmatic.
Okay, very interesting.
So yeah, we have a laid-back summery beat from Hit-Boy. Nice old-school feel to it with the chords. Nice flute ringing throughout it. And Cordae, like, if anyone was going to maybe have a hard time keeping up, you could have said that it might have been Cordae. But he absolutely understood the assignment here and has sick references to Nas's music, which I found was a really cool way of paying homage to Nas in the same song. Where he's rapping about being born the same year it was written came out. Even throws in a line about life's a bitch. And what's really dope is that he also took his own turn at the hook, and they all take their own turn at the hook. But of course, Cordae is probably the best singer out of the three, so he delivered it the best. But ultimately, this is a song that you should listen to at least once in your lifetime, just because it shows the rewards you can get as a listener if you're up to date with a bunch of different styles of the genre. And it shows you how great an MC could be by doing their homework. And you could tell that Cordae did his homework when it came to being able to match up to these guys bar for bar on this entire track. And Freddie Gibbs brings more of an aggressive energy, and then Nas brings the song to a close, giving us the best verse of the entire track. And it's pretty much just a song that's about having to take chances in life and really staying true to your moral ground. So nice messages, nice rapping. Anything you can expect within a hip-hop song was present in Life is Like a Dice Game. So
fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so this is going to be my last song for today. Lengthy episode, eh? A lot of explanation.
Yeah, man. We treated you guys with a longer one today. Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right, so let me close off this episode, at least on my end, with Terrorist Threats by Absol featuring Danny Brown and Janae Aiko from Control System that released back in 2012. You know, Dave Free produced this song?
Really?
It's a Dave Free beat.
Wow.
That's fucking crazy.
I did not know that. Just him alone? Or?
Yeah, he's the only producer credit, apparently, according to Genius, obviously. So once you start getting into the song, what's cool is that kind of like Free the Robots, it's kind of a message for the people to stand up against the higher power and to be able to rebel. And just kind of talking about how, regardless if you're someone that comes from, you know, the upper class, or if you're someone that comes from the streets, we all face the same dangers as a society, and that is the government, and that is people that are controlling us, and that is people that are coming at us on a day-to-day basis. And you know, I don't want to come into this episode with my tinfoil hat or whatever the case may be, but there's a lot of real shit that's being spoken about in these verses, and how corrupt the government could be, and how instead of everyone kind of you know, pinning themselves against each other, right? Like, you look at a lot of people in modern society, there's a lot of hatred, there's a lot of things being spewed. It's not always sunshine and flowers. But if we were to be able to unite as one and as one population, no one would be able to stop us. And that's the basis of the entire song. What's also cool is that there's a little bit of an Easter egg here, because Jhené Aiko is the one on the hook, and she's actually doing an interpolation of Jay-Z's Jigga What Jigga Who. But of course, with a bit of a twist on it. So I really like that as well. And then if you actually look at the outro of the previous song on the album, which is called Bohemian Grove, it kind of falls into line with this one as well. So this is kind of going more into like the concept of control system, which is a really crazy concept of an album as well. You guys should really go through it if you have not already. And it kind of talks about how people will become our cattle. That means slaves, it means collateral, talking about how people will be used as mindless people within the grand scheme of things, and that if you don't take control over your life and make your own decisions as a human being, you're basically worthless. Not only that, but there's a cool, like, what is this called when you pronounce a word a certain way but there's different meanings to it?
A homophone, yeah.
I believe so.
Where it's like, for example, like I was saying before, the MF Doom song called Gazillion Ear, mm-hmm. but also means gazillionaire.
Exactly. So what's really cool is that you hear Absol say Babylon. Babylon could be interpolated as obviously someone that's just babbling on and someone that's kind of just speaking randomly. But it's also used in a different meaning in the song, talking about Babylon and talking about reaching to the highest level of God and being united as one. And it could also just be interpreted as babbled as well. So I like that sort of, like, I could call it a literary device, right? It's a literary device.
It is.
Within Absol's, like, arsenal as far as, like, what this song offers. And, of course, you get a fantastic feature from Danny Brown. Who the fuck else to bring in Danny Brown for this type of content?
Yeah.
Or, you know?
For that kind of song? Supermanic.
Someone that's going to kind of just fucking stir the pot up and start, like, shithousing, you know? Someone that's going to really come through and just fuck everything up.
Yeah, it's like, if the apocalypse ever happens, you want Danny Brown to be, like, a voice, like, for the intercoms of the world in the streets, you know? Like,
you want Danny Brown and then you want Jhené Aiko to kind of, like,
smoothen things out. Have that balance.
So that's why it's such a sick collaboration, too. Finding Danny Brown, Jhené Aiko, Absol, and fucking Day Free within the same collaboration is so cool to me, especially in 2024. And it's my favorite song off of Control System, right next to Illuminate. So there we go.
Awesome song.
That's going to conclude my list, by the way.
Yeah, my last recommendation, a song that you need to hear in your lifetime, is going to be a song that is called Trippin' by Earth Gang featuring Kehlani off of 2019's Mirrorland. And
I love this song.
Special song, and I never really knew that I needed an Earth Gang and Kehlani collaboration until I got this. And I think the reason why I feel like it's something you need to hear in your lifetime is that there's often a lot of dialogue, I feel like, within the communities today about how oftentimes rap duos or even solo rappers, when it comes to the melodic side of tracks, they won't deliver. Those would be like the weakest compartments.
This isn't the case
of their catalog. And it's really not the case with this song. If anything, it's absolutely one of the standouts from this album. And it just comes down to the vocal performances and the rapping performances. I mean, you have Johnny Venus coming in, singing with beautiful backing vocals, has a chorus about his girl tripping, features some heavenly vocals all throughout it. Then Kehlani comes in, and what I love about her performance as well is the fact that she is giving you dirty talk about sort of being intimate with someone, but she does it in such an elegant way where you don't really feel disgusted by the end of it. It fits in with the vibe and the tempo of the track. And you could tell she put a lot of effort into the verse. Sonically, I think you could appreciate the fact that there's a mix of jazz and funk influences woven into the actual instrumental, as well as the melodies and singing performances. It's just a great layered hip-hop love song that has a really relatable subject where it's about, like, it's two people that really do have love for each other, but there's too many issues and there's too many obstacles for them to see the whole thing through. So again, it fires on all cylinders in terms of performances, in terms of beating out your expectations for what the song might be as a melodic hip hop song. As I said, performance wise, it's stunning. So Trippin' by Earth Gang, that's going to conclude our episode on 20 rap songs you need to hear in your lifetime. And what's cool about this is that we could do this again, because there's way more than just 20 songs.
I have
songs.
A whole other, like, list.
Yeah, there's way more than just 20 songs.
What was
songs.
My favorite selection from you today?
My favorite selection of yours would be for songs you need to hear in your lifetime, I think Free the Robots.
Yeah,
just because it's not one that everyone would have heard. What about on my end?
If I had to pick one, maybe Thug's Mansion.
Thug's Mansion.
I feel like that's a must listen for anyone that's invested into the genre. That's really a special song, especially for me as a Tupac fan. So listen, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude today's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed Louis and I's selection. And as I mentioned at the beginning, if you guys want to stay up to date with our entire catalog, smash the follow button and pay attention for new episodes every single Tuesday. Thank you guys so much for watching this, and we'll catch you in the next one. Peace.